Welcome to your Backlash review show here on the WWE Podcast. We're going to get into all of the matches. We're going to go through them one by one and answer your questions of, did Orton versus Edge live up to the hype? Was Bobby Lashley elevated even in his loss? Could we see a breakup of The Miz and Morrison? And so much more. So we're going to get everything started right after this.
There's nothing like a great cup of coffee. And Nautical Star Coffee carry delicious coffee in their online store that tastes amazing, and it's made fresh to order. Located in North Carolina, Nautical Star Coffee wants to be your go-to online coffee store. Like you, they were tired of the same old mediocre coffee that cost a fortune but had little flavor to show for it. At Nautical Star Coffee, there's no minimum purchase required. Sometimes you just want one bag of coffee, and that's fine with them. Their coffee is roasted, bagged, and shipped at the time of your order to ensure freshness. They search for the best coffee blends from Honduras, Colombia, and Costa Rica to give you the greatest cup of coffee. They're also veteran-owned and operated and truly value your coffee needs. If you want the coffee labeled with your own logo, let them know. They can do that for you. Perfect for restaurants that want to have their own coffee brand, and great for your local company or small business, too. Start shopping right now at nauticalstarcoffee.com. That's nauticalstarcoffee.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Backlash pay-per-view review show. And boy, do we have a ton of stuff to get to today, including some breaking news, if you haven't heard, about Edge and his injury, how long he'll be out, that kind of thing. We're going to get to that in just a second. We'll start with that before we get to the review. And so if you haven't heard, again, Edge sustained an injury during the match with Orton that was pre-taped. It did not occur live last night, but at some point during the match, Edge sustained a triceps injury, and he's already had successful surgery, and he's recovering. So, triceps injuries, again, even if he tore it completely off of his bone, I mean, you're looking at, what, 4 to 6 months, maybe, at the most, assuming that all the healing and physical therapy go well. And then he has to get himself back into ring shape and all that kind of thing. I mean, you could be looking towards the end of the year if Edge returns. And it's a shame, but is it really a shame? Right? Because with Edge on the shelf, I would rather see Edge in front of a live audience. I don't know about you, just like everybody else, but especially Edge. See him in front of a live crowd. He deserves it. Certainly, Drew McIntyre deserves it, and they've been robbed. But is it really that big of a deal and that bad that Edge is on the shelf? I feel burnt for him from the perspective of he busted his ass to get into shape, to get in the position that he's in now and put on a great performance that he did last night. But when you think about it, given the situation, and that if you asked him, I'm sure that he would tell you he would rather be in front of a live crowd than in front of a bunch of NXT trainee robots that, they're doing the best they can, but they are, it's like state-run radio, right? Like, they are just the controlled version of what WWE fans should be based on WWE's definition. And during the match last night with Orton and Edge, I'm sure WWE was just basking in their glory about being able to finally control the crowd noise to what they feel it should be. And blatantly do it, transparently do it, and they called it enhanced audio. And at first I'm thinking, are they just going to put more mics around the ring? Are we going to hear, like, kind of what they did with the XFL, where they have mics in places that normally mics aren't? And no, that's not what we got. What we got was a well-edited crowd noise insertion for the match. And to be honest, At first, I was very displeased, thinking that, oh God, here we go. Here we go with the post-production, what's the latest special effect that we can put into this? And it wasn't that. It was a authentically done crowd noise that they did. They did a great job of making it feel natural. And then you look around and you're like, how are the... At first I was like, how are this many people making that much noise? And it quickly dawned on me that they just inserted crowd noise. It's really for enhancing our... enhancing the match presentation is really what it was for. And I understand that. And I can appreciate that. And so I guess I'm just going to jump right into Orton versus Edge. I'm not going to go in any other direction. I'll kind of stay on this topic. Now, if you listen to this show, you know how much I despised the tagline that they built this whole pay-per-view around. Not just the match. Not just the match. But the entire pay-per-view had the words, "the greatest wrestling match ever" on it. So from the get-go, they build this as the greatest wrestling match ever. And I tore it limb from limb on a weekly basis, saying that it was a complete joke, that it was a transparent exposure of the business, that it gave fans expectations that WWE can't deliver on, and on. I mean, I ripped this thing apart just constantly. I mean, every show it felt like I ripped it apart, and I stand by everything I said. So don't think this is not a setup for me to turn on everything I said. No. I stand 300% by everything I said about that tagline. It is still the dumbest thing I've ever heard for all the reasons that you guys have heard over the weeks on my show here. With that said, standing by my words, I still think that they put on a hell of an effort. I think that Orton and Edge were on their game. Yes, it was post-edited. It was edited. Yes, they had all the time in the world to make it look right. They had the advantage of not having to do it in front of live audience, which means you can stop, cut, redirect, redo, reposition. They had the advantage of doing that, which is really an unfair advantage to all other matches that have ever occurred ever inside of a wrestling ring, where you don't normally get this opportunity. And with that all being said, though, it was produced very well. I will say that WWE put their best foot forward production-wise of making it feel authentic and not hokey. They made it feel like it was a big deal. They didn't just mail it in, and I can appreciate that. The crowd noise started to make it feel really, it felt refreshing. I will say that. At first, I was kind of, like I said, I rolled my eyes and I said, oh God, here we go. Here we go with the tricks and the hocus pocus of their production team. And I was just having awful flashbacks of Money in the Bank, awful flashbacks of the Firefly Funhouse. And none of that happened. They put their hocus pocus into play, but it was for authentic, organic reasons. And it had the best intentions. It wasn't just like, hey, let's kind of like play around like five-year-olds on dad's computer. And it wasn't that. Orton and Edge, to their credit, yes, they had all the time in the world to edit, re-edit, and redo all their moves if something didn't work out, did bust their butts on this match. And they made it feel like a big deal. The physicality was well done. The pacing of the match was very good. The physicality, like I said, the physicality was really kind of scary at times because of Orton targeting Edge's neck. That still bothers me. I know if you're a heel, you target that, but not when it's, number one, a man's neck. And even if it's somebody that didn't have a surgically repaired neck, do you really want to target the neck and do worked moves? Eventually, one of those worked moves isn't going to work. And it'll be a shoot move. You need to be very careful when working on a guy's neck. And I know that Orton's a pro's pro. But boy, it's still risky, isn't it? And it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable, not in a way that gets heel heat on Orton to me. It's uncomfortable for the man that I enjoy watching be Edge, of Adam Copeland. Like, I'm concerned about Adam Copeland and his livelihood when they do that. not so much, makes me angry at Randy Orton. No, it just makes me concerned about Edge as a human being. But it all obviously worked other than the triceps injury, which, I mean, like I said, is it really that big of a tragedy? No better time to get injured than right now. There really isn't, because when you return in 4 to 6 months, again, that's the timetable that's in my head from previous triceps injuries that I've seen in pro wrestling, 4 to 6 months. I could be way off, okay? Don't quote me. You said it was going to be 4 to 6. That's in my brain. This is not a WWE official statement. So, but at least a few months, right? At least a few to 6 months is probably what I'm shooting for and was realistic. So, all that being said, again, the focusing on the neck was a little bit concerning, but the psychology was really good. The psychology of just two guys who have decades of experience between them going out and doing a wrestling match. And they did that. They did just that. They did had a wrestling match. That's exactly what this was, and I was glad that it was a true wrestling match, and it was not some kind of play on words of, it's not going to be a wrestling match, it's going to be kind of like just your typical, fighting on the outside, using the 10 count to bash your opponents into the steps, and it was not that. I mean, we got to that, but it built up very nicely. You start with the collar and elbow tie-up. You work into some chain wrestling. You do counter moves upon counter moves and holds and counters. And yes, we got the Randy Orton obligatory 15-minute headlock. I mean, that's just Randy Orton's finish at this point. And it built up nicely to chain wrestling, to eventually punches and kicks, to more powerful moves, to powerful moves that you can actually buy as finishing a match. And then it moved into signature moves. And then it moved into their own finishes, other wrestlers' finishes, and then eventually ending with their own finish. And Randy Orton winning, right move. I thought it was the right move. I picked Randy Orton. In fact, I believe I was I clean swept my predictions for Backlash, not to toot my own horn. And yes, there was a double count out for Nia Jax and Asuka. Yeah, I didn't get that right, but she retained. Okay, and we'll get to that too. But I wanted to start off with what you guys remember and probably what this pay-per-view will be remembered for, and that's Randy Orton versus Edge. And rightfully so. Again, I think the right man won. And if Edge had won, I think what we would have seen is the end of this program. Because now each man has has a win apiece. And now they can go to the third chapter. Now, when is that third chapter, given Edge's injury? Probably not for a while. You may not see it until the Rumble. I mean, it could be that long. I would suspect Survivor Series. If you're going to put me on the spot, it could be Survivor Series. But you can bet your bottom dollar that the rubber match will be sometime, I believe, in 2020. It may be cold, and we may be in the holiday season, and hopefully past the coronavirus, where fans can come in the arena without masks and be just damn fans, and we can get all past this. Hopefully that's the case. But who knows? It definitely lended itself, the match last night, to setting up for a finale between these two. And where that is and how that happens, I don't know. I would have ventured to guess it would have been at SummerSlam. That's my assumption, that it would have been at SummerSlam, that these two would have finally blown off their program. Randy Orton, the way he won, was not just an RKO. He pulled out the 2007, 2008, 2009 even, whatever the heck it is, that he was using. Maybe it was an earlier than that. It might have been earlier. That he used the punt. Might have been 06, 07. Because I think it was prior to the PG era. But they had Randy Orton use the punt. Very safely. I mean, I saw it didn't actually connect with Edge's head. That was a good thing. But having him win that way was the exact right way to have Randy Orton win. And it was a vile thing to do. It was also a great touch to have Randy talk about how he wants him to, he wants Edge to go back home and tell them that Uncle or Uncle Randy or Uncle Orton or something says hi, or he's, you know, he something about it. And I don't have the exact words, but basically telling his kids he says hello. That's how you know this program's continuing, folks. Whether it's 4, 5, 6 months from now, it will end. And I'm looking forward to it because, like I said, this injury is great timing. It just is for this program. Interesting to see what Orton does in the meantime, right? What the heck does Orton do in the meantime? We don't know. The one critique I would have about the match, because I got to have something. And honestly, like if it was five stars being like one of the greatest of all time, I'd give it a 4 out of 5. I really would. But the one thing I would say is, did they really need to go into kick out of finishers, kick out of finishers, kick out of finishers? I got a little bit of a quick flashback to Seth and The Fiend in Hell in a Cell back in late last year, when it was just constant kickouts of finishers and nothing would put anybody down. And suddenly everybody had spinach like they were Popeye. I mean, it just was insane. And I got a little bit of that. And I was concerned because it was kickout, kickout. When Orton hit that RKO on Edge off the second rope, I think it was, when Edge jumped and Orton hit it, I said, oh my God, that's it. They got me on that one. The Rock Bottom didn't get me. Anytime they use other wrestlers' finishes, that 99% of the time doesn't work. It was surprising to see. Very surprising to see that they actually started to pull out those things. And I think at one point somebody went for a tombstone, which didn't happen. Edge hit a Rock Bottom. Orton hit a pedigree. It was entertaining to see them use those moves. No doubt about it. But it was kind of like, what? Why? My own finish isn't working? I don't know. But it was great to see. These two really, really put a great show on. So I guess that leaves one question to be answered about this match. Was it the greatest wrestling match of all time? Well, if you ask me, my answer is pretty simple. No, it was not the greatest wrestling match ever. It was not. It was, would I put it in my top 30, top 40? Maybe, yeah, sure. Yeah, I probably put it in my top 25. I probably would put it in my top 25. But again, it's such a subjective thing. It's impossible to live up to this expectation, but they certainly at least attempted it. They didn't half-heart this effort. That's what I appreciate about it. They did not half-heart this effort on all fronts. Orton didn't half it. Edge didn't half-heart it of an effort. And honestly, more importantly, Orton didn't half-heart an effort, and also shows you again how damn good he can be when he turns it on. Orton, and again, that's been brought up in many, many promos by Edge, that you don't even try and you're still good. And Orton brags about that. And it's true. That's truth. Orton is just going through the motions half the time. But boy, when he turns it up, it just is gold. And him and Edge have an amazing chemistry together. I'm very excited to see what the finale of this program will be. And I'm assuming, if I was to guess, maybe Hell in a Cell. Right? I know that the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is October, and that would be a very, I think, optimistic view of when Orton or Edge could return, but it would be a nice target for Orton and Edge to finish their program inside Hell in a Cell in October. So sometimes things are blessings in disguises, and this certainly could be one of those examples where Orton and Edge line up perfectly with Orton's or Edge's recovery time to Hell in a Cell, because that's to me where this thing ends. It has to. Where are you going to go? A street fight? No. No holds barred? No. Submission match? No. Where are you going to go? Iron Man match? No. They pretty much did that at WrestleMania with the time that they went. You can't obviously do another Last Man Standing. Can't do First Blood because WWE doesn't do that anymore. Although, Edge would have won pretty quickly last night, right? With Edge getting, or Orton getting blasted in above the eye. I think it was right on his eyebrow, getting cut open. That was kind of cool to see. When you see blood now, it's like, whoa. It's such a great gift from the wrestling gods, isn't it? I mean, it just, it's great. Obviously, Randy Orton's fine. But again, I just don't see where you go. Steel cage? Well, if you're going to do a steel cage, you might as well put a roof on it. If this is the finale, that is, to me, where this thing ends. It's the only place that this can end. This is the destination. If I'm WWE and I get an optimistic time frame of 3 to 6 months, I'm looking more towards 4 months and saying, all right, Hell in a Cell, let's do this thing. So hopefully that can be the case. I think that is going to be an amazing finale when that happens, because you can bet your bottom dollar it will. I do not believe Edge at any cost will sit this one out and will be on the mend, as he already had successful surgery. So, wow. Okay, I spent almost 20 minutes talking about Orton and Edge, but I had to get that out there because it really, I want to start at a positive note. It was a very, very good match, if not great. Not instant classic. Okay, I know CBS Sports said that it definitely delivered or lived up to the hype. Well, really? CBS, have you seen wrestling over 30 years? Like, even the last 10 years, right? How can you possibly tell me that this is a better match than, say, HBK Taker at WrestleMania 26? Angle and HBK at WrestleMania 21? You can't. You can't. I mean, so nonetheless, it is up there on many people's lists. And CBS, I think you need to, I don't know, maybe line your pockets more with a little bit of WWE's money for whoever wrote that. I mean, did it really? Good grief. Okay, here we go. So overall, beyond the Randy Orton and Edge match, I thought the pay-per-view was good. I did. I really enjoyed Backlash. And I think one of the primary reasons I'm enjoying Backlash and WWE pay-per-views more as a whole is the length of time of the pay-per-views. You know, it's just kind of like to the point. You have video package match, quick interview, video package match. There's not a whole lot of backstage nonsense or whatever else they fill the pay-per-view with. It's straight to the point. I don't know if the live audience adds more time than I realize. There's something in the live audience format that really seems to up the time of the pay-per-view. And in this case, WWE is, I think, benefiting. One of the benefits of this whole virus thing, the pay-per-views are great in terms of the length. It just instantly adds a star to the pay-per-view grade. It really means that much. It's just great time. So anyway, the pay-per-view was a really good show, I think. I think it might have been the best pay-per-view WWE has had in the coronavirus, no fans in attendance era. I would even argue it might have been better than WrestleMania. You could make that argument. I know that it's WrestleMania, but this was a show built well. The match quality across the board was generally pretty good, not all, and we'll get to those. But I think it just all fell into place nicely. They're starting to find their groove. The NXT trainee robots are definitely, they do add a lot to the program from a presentation standpoint. And I'm enjoying it. And I enjoyed last night a lot. And so let's go through it. Let's go beyond Orton and Edge here. And let's talk about Asuka and Nia Jax. Now, I don't think anyone really believed that Nia Jax was here to win the championship. At least right now. This was a setup for a longer program. And rightfully so. We have just seen the first chapter of Asuka Asuka and Nia Jax. This is the first chapter of probably three chapters. That's about average in terms of the length of a program. You know, you have one win, the other win, and then the blow-off. Again, this is very typical. It's not a rule of thumb. But Nia Jax, the way that things ended last night in a double countout, to really no fault of Asuka, I mean, it's a babyface. You don't want to get counted out, even though you know it could retain your championship. She tried to get in before the 10 count, wasn't successful, and they were both counted out, resulting in a retention for Asuka. And this really wasn't a long match, and it really didn't need to be. This was exactly what you thought you were going to get, I think, in terms of the psychology of the match. And that's really most of Nia Jax's matches, because she's three times the size of any woman on the roster. And Tamina doesn't count because she shows up like twice a year. But she is. She is about three times the size of... I shouldn't say three, because if a woman wrestler is, say, 120 pounds, that means that Nia Jax would have to be 350 plus, and she's not. I think she's probably in the realm of 270, probably 200, no, I mean 250, 260. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of that's muscle, okay? She is extremely strong, probably stronger than some of the guys on the roster. And so with that size, so she's probably at least twice the size of most women. That means that most of your matches, you're going to be playing the same card over and over because you almost have to. You can't sell the way that a normal woman in that person's weight class would sell. In other words, if she's in there with Asuka, she's not going to be selling the way Asuka does. Just basic physics, basic logic. So Nia Jax is going to have to play the same card. Her matches are going to get pretty stale, I think, because of the fact that you have the same thing happening where her size is playing a difference, or playing a really driving the whole match. It's her size. She's bigger. She's stronger. And I get it. And I understand. And we all know her track record of injuries. We know that. I mean, I don't believe that she's intentionally hurting anybody. I don't think anybody believes that. That if anyone believes that, then, I mean, I don't know what you're watching. I don't know why anybody would intentionally injure another person on TV, because everything's watched. You can see intent, and then kill your career that you've lost six figures over, right? Or more. So the intent's not the problem, but she does have a bad track record. Whether that's bad luck or she needs additional training, it's not for me to say. But again, this Asuka and Nia Jax match, exactly what you'd expect in terms of psychology. She overpowered Asuka for most of the match. And it ended up in a double countout, which to me leads to Extreme Rules. This is a setup for Extreme Rules, which may be the blow off at SummerSlam. And that's to me where this is headed. And I'm fine with it. You know, I'm not an anti Nia Jax person per se, that I wouldn't have her on my roster. I think that on Twitter, she can be a little bit touch and go, but I guess I'll digress and not dive into that. It's a rabbit hole for me. But I just don't see her as champion. I don't see Nia Jax as champion, at least in the short term. Because I mentioned this on a show with Michael earlier in the week. She just has no personality, at least from a character development standpoint. Like, how am I supposed to get invested in Nia Jax? We don't know anything about her. I've said that before. Like, does anybody know anything about Nia Jax that WWE has allowed on their TV? Has there ever been a video package on Nia Jax? Do we know anything about her other than she has, like, kind of like pretty scary eyes that they zoom in on when she comes out? Right? I mean, does anyone know what she's about? Or she likes makeup. Okay. I mean, I think she's a good looking woman. She certainly is an attractive woman, I think. But so are 99% of the women on the roster. We got to get beyond that. Okay, I don't know what we know about what Nia Jax. We know nothing. So, I can't connect with a champion I don't understand or know. But, okay, moving on. Let's move on to the next match here. And what's in my head here as I'm scrolling through? Ah, Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus. This was a good match. I think it was better than I thought it could or probably would have been. And with Sheamus winning, right move. This is not the Jeff Hardy show anymore. And they've built Sheamus pretty well since he returned. they had the vignettes for many, many weeks about him talking about, I guess, weeding out the weak links or weeding out the small people or whatever he's going to do. And if anybody makes another Shorty G joke again, I mean, can we just go back to grade school? Like, I feel like I'm back in middle school or elementary school. Does everyone that comes in contact with Shorty G on a promo have to make some joke about his height? I don't know why he doesn't just shut them up and just say two words, Rey Mysterio. Anybody talking about him? His height a problem? Right? Eddie Guerrero wasn't exactly known for his height. A couple inches taller than Shorty G. Excuse me, Chad Gable. Right? So, can someone please stop it? The nonsense. Good grief. Okay. But Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, I really thought it was good. They were very, very physical. Sheamus, the win here made sense. As I said, it's not the Jeff Hardy show. Sheamus right now needs to be built more than Jeff Hardy. They're clearly building Sheamus, I think, for a possible Sheamus versus Braun Strowman matchup down the line. That probably, it could come as soon as Extreme Rules, and then you're leading up to Braun Strowman versus The Fiend at SummerSlam. So Sheamus is kind of a stopgap. That, to me, would be the positioning of this, because I think Sheamus and Jeff Hardy are done. And that is where I think it's headed, is Sheamus versus Braun Strowman at Extreme Rules, and then it's Bray Wyatt showing up. And I keep saying Bray Wyatt's going to show up as The Fiend and to interrupt Braun Strowman, and it hasn't happened yet, but it will. It will. The match with these two, though, because I'm here to review the match, it was good. I mean, you had Sheamus kicking out. Well, he didn't really kick out of the Twist of Fate and then the Swanton Bomb. He did the old heel trick of putting his leg on the rope at the 2.5 mark, stopping the count. And the interesting part of this, too, was also having Hardy look a bit disheveled and disgruntled and disgraced sitting in the ring after he lost clean to Sheamus. That, to me, was more telling. Like, where does Hardy go from here? And I think the announcers even alluded to that. Where does Jeff Hardy go from here? You know, where does he go? I mean, obviously, I think he goes somewhere. Perhaps he has a rematch on SmackDown with Sheamus. WWE loves to have their pay-per-view rematches on the following Raws and SmackDowns of the pay-per-view, and that's just what they do. Maybe they do that. But to me, Hardy is... I don't think he has any championships in his future. I mean, I don't. Could he go after AJ Styles for the Intercontinental title? He could. He could, or Sheamus could. But then you'd have a heel versus heel, so nix that. But I think Jeff Hardy could try to challenge AJ Styles, ultimately losing. Because AJ Styles, to me right now, is on the ascent big time. I'm loving what AJ Styles is doing with the Intercontinental title so far. It just feels right. I know he hasn't been Intercontinental title championship. He hasn't been Intercontinental champion for long, but he just feels right as champion. And he did a promo that was aired on Backlash. That was important to get him there, even though he didn't have a match, to get him in the eyes of fans, remind them of what happened. And that's exactly what they did. So kudos to WWE for at least remembering to put AJ Styles on the pay-per-view, even if he's technically not on the pay-per-view. Okay, moving on to the next match here. The Women's Tag Team Championship, with the entire Women's Tag Team Division, wasn't billed like that, but it pretty much is, with Bayley and Sasha versus the Iconics versus Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. Good match. I thought this was great. It really, I shouldn't say great, it was good. The match and the energy of the match was really what I think we should take notice of here. It was the energy of the match, where it was fast-paced, kind of the 2020 style of pro wrestling, fast-paced, lots of no selling, but lots of action, lots of like visual, satisfaction, but not a lot of psychological satisfaction. Does that make sense? I think that's a great way to capture 2020 wrestling, is lots of fun things on the surface, but nothing to really tickle your brain, where it's like, ooh, I can get deep into this. It's kind of like, ooh, what's next? What's next? What's next? that felt like a little bit like this, but really that's what pro wrestling in general is in 2020, of why everything doesn't have a whole lot of staying power, nor do fans get long-term emotionally invested in characters, because it's a lack of character development and a lot of, hey, let's do cool moves and, you know, tax our bodies at twice the rate we should, because, hey, if I could do 6 450 splashes today, that's what I'm going to do, right? I mean, yeah, anyway, that's a whole nother rant. Maybe I'll do a video on that damn thing. Okay. I thought, again, the energy in this match was very good. The effort was very good by all involved. There was a moment, and at the very end of the match, when Alexa hit Twisted Bliss, I thought that she was going to retain or regain the championships, but alas, it was not meant to be. And we had Sasha and Bayley retain. And look out, guys. Look out for the most devastating finisher in WWE today. The roll-up. The dreaded roll-up. It's just insanity. Like, again, I'm not defaming this match because of that. This is just a small microcosm of the larger issue of WWE using their roll-ups as a finish much, much too often. When you have men and women out there doing death-defying moves, and none of that is being sold, and it barely creates a two count, and yet a roll-up is just, can't do it. I mean, look no further than the 24/7 championship. That's how probably 95% of the title changes or title retentions took place, is a roll-up from behind. I don't know if it's just kind of a... I guess it's almost a lazy way to book, because, yes, you're getting the person you want to win. But it's also a way to protect the person that lost, because it could be, oh, they were just surprised, they couldn't get out. It's more of a defining statement if you have somebody hit their finish and win clean like that than if they win with a roll-up, because it could have just been they got lucky for 3 seconds. Rather than, oh, they knocked him out and hit their finish and here they go, or they tapped out or whatever it may be. So maybe that's just lazy booking so they can protect everybody, which means no one's protected. Kind of ironic, isn't it? When you try to protect everybody, nobody's protected. It feels like a political statement. But I enjoyed the match overall. Having the Iconics back is awesome. I love the Iconics so much. So much. I really hope that they get a long run as champion again. And they don't just kind of half-ass it like last time, and after they win the belts, whenever that may be. Which, I mean, there's only 3 teams in the women's division. They got a pretty good chance of getting them fairly soon. Have them actually showcased on the show. Let's not just bury them in the background of a locker room or wherever they were hiding after they won the championships at WrestleMania from Bayley and Sasha a couple of WrestleManias ago. But it was a fun match, and it actually, I think, over-delivered a little bit for me. All right, moving on. Let's see. Apollo Crews versus Andrade in the kickoff show for the United States Championship. Really funny, isn't it? WWE has a championship match. A championship match on the kickoff show. And it's Apollo Crews, the guy that they've been building for the last 6 weeks, against Andrade, former United States champion, making a name for himself on Raw with Zelina Vega and Angel Garza. And you have Apollo Crews and Angel Garza on the kickoff show in a championship match. Boy, just sometimes it's so telling. This was a good match. I wouldn't put it at the top of anybody's list for anything. Just kind of like your run-of-the-mill, just good match. It's what you'd expect from two good workers. Athletic, good chemistry. And we had Apollo Crews defeat Andrade via pinfall to retain the championship. And Kevin Owens getting himself involved, hitting a stunner on Angel Garza on the outside. And boy, that must... You know, Kevin Owens delivering all these stunners in places that aren't the ring, it's got to start to jar your spine a little bit or bruise your ass. I mean, it just does. He must be waking up sore most mornings, or just be like, hey, couldn't I get a finish that doesn't require me to land flat on my ass? I mean, anyway, I guess that's the price you pay for hijacking Stone Cold's finish, of which he did get permission for, I know, but okay. But Apollo Crews retains, and as he should, at least if you're going to make Apollo Crews's title reign meaningful, keep it on him. Let's see what he can do. All right, moving on here. The Universal Championship. Braun Strowman versus The Miz and John Morrison. Okay, this was not my favorite. I will say that. It was not great. Oh boy. Okay. I wouldn't say this is a F, but I'd give it like a low C, maybe a high D. The weird thing is that WWE sprung on us that it's not going to be a co-champion type of deal. It's going to be whoever makes the pinfall or gets the submission. I mean, LOL. I mean, I love when they do that where this is by pinfall or submission, and the person, the people in the match have no finish submission maneuvers. But I digress. But they sprung that stipulation out of nowhere on us. And I don't know what the motivating factor was. Clearly, they decided that there needs to be tension between Miz and Morrison. And maybe they have bigger plans for Morrison or Miz. But the Raw and SmackDown tag team divisions aren't exactly strong. Taking any team out right now and splitting them up really, really hurts the depth of that of the tag team division as a whole for the company. So if that's indeed the purpose of this, because I don't see any other purpose for that stipulation being changed at the last second other than to create division or strife between the tag team here. And it bore fruit. I don't know. Whatever the saying is, it happened, is what I'm trying to say. And Miz and Morrison ended up getting a little bit tense because Morrison went for the cover after the super face-crushing finale, or super skull-crushing finale. And Morrison went for the cover, and Miz pulled him off, and Miz almost looked like he did it out of instinct, which ended up their demise. It really led to their demise because Braun Strowman ended up getting the victory here and retaining the United States Championship. It was enough of a distraction, or the United States, the Universal Championship, and it was enough of a distraction for Braun Strowman to capitalize. And does anybody really want to see Miz and Morrison break up, though? I mean, I'm torn because I want to see the tag team division strong. And Miz and Morrison add that quality tag team. They're good on the mic, and they can always put on good matches. And so it's hard to, from that perspective. But on the other side of the coin, does Morrison really belong in the same place he left the company in 8 years ago? Or does he maybe deserve an opportunity here to branch out on his own? There's a case to be made for that. So this... it'd be interesting to see how this all plays out with the strife between them now. And there really wasn't a whole lot to this match. I mean, Braun Strowman won, and can they just stop with the Strowman Express? Can we just stop before it gets started? He actually has a train whistle at the beginning of his entrance now. I mean, I guess the Monster Among Men was something that was said ad nauseum, and they just got tired of it, and they're like, we need something else. We need a new t-shirt. Because the t-shirt came out before anything was mentioned, or his music was changed. So apparently he's a locomotive now. I mean, I've seen worse. But it's so childish, isn't it? I don't know. I guess it's me. I'm a 35-year-old guy sitting here, like, remembering the great years of things that were edgy. And that's just, I don't know. You have Strowman on a train. I mean... choo-choo, right? I mean, is he Thomas the Tank Engine now? Right? I mean, it's... okay. Moving on. Strowman retains, and I think Strowman moves on to probably Sheamus. That's my guess. And Jeff Hardy moves on to AJ Styles. Again, guesses, but we'll see. Then we got... let's see here. What do I deal with? I already went over Edge and Orton. But... there are two matches left, and I guess I'll start with the good one here. And that's Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley. I love the way this match started with the full Nelson, where Lashley came up from behind and held Drew McIntyre in a full Nelson for quite some time. And then the match started after he was able to somehow kind of get to his feet. And Lashley, I think, put on a good performance. Yes, he had a couple of botches. There was some things that were a little bit sloppy. We know that. Happens. These two have not had a big match environment in, I don't even know, ever, right? These two have not had that pressure on them ever in their careers. And I think that Lashley and Drew have a future in working more together. And MVP at ringside was good. The match was really good. The spear, the ankle lock was really good. Now, all that being said, and Lashley looked like a monster, and I love how they talked about that, you know, he seems laser focused now. MVP laser focused, and he got him off of Lana. And Lana here is such a, you talk about a Debbie Downer, or pouring a cold glass of on a raging fire, a cold glass of water. That is Lana right now. She's like, how do I equate this? She's kind of like, I guess I'll equate this to my college years. If you're a guy, you can relate to this. She's like the girl at the bar that if you're hitting on her friend and you feel like you're making some progress and maybe, you know, might think you might go home with her or whatever, and you're this close, she's the mother hen that swoops in and takes away everything that you've been working for all night. She's the one that comes in and goes, okay, girl, it's time to go home. And then she's like, I'm sorry, I have to go. She's that girl. I'll leave that a word very nicely. I think you know what word I'm thinking of which I have dealt with a few in my college years. But she feels like that. She's like the Debbie Downer mother hen. And I don't mean that in a good way of getting heel heat. I don't mean this in a way, I wish this wasn't even a story, right? Because I think Lashley is even above telling this story right now. Just Lana needs to just go away. And I don't mean it in a heel heat. Oh, I hope someone puts Lana in her place. No. I just hope she goes away. Just I don't know where or how. I don't even care if they don't give me an explanation of why she left or where she is or why she's suddenly just in the women's division competing for a battle royal for an opportunity at the championship for the women's division. I don't care. I'm actually going to give WWE a free pass if they just suddenly have her next week as a rosebud or have her as like an extra in the crowd yelling for and cheering and booing with the NXT trainees. I don't care. She needs to leave my television screen. And more importantly, just leave Bobby Lashley alone. I know that's the story they're telling, and I know that that's the out for Lashley losing was Lana being there and inadvertently distracting Bobby Lashley just long enough for McIntyre to hit the Claymore and put Lashley down. I was kind of disappointed that Lashley didn't kick out after one Claymore, but at the same time, by the same token, I'm also kind of grateful that, you know, a finisher should be exactly that, finishing a match. It should end the match. Otherwise, why call it a finish? So I'm kind of torn on those two schools of thought. But to me, the real story is get Lana the F out of here. Just pay her. I don't know. I'm not saying to fire her. I'm saying give her everything she's owed in her contract. But I have no interest in seeing Lana anymore on my screen in any capacity. I just don't. She has more than worn out her welcome. I don't care if she's extremely attractive. Doesn't even ring a bell with me. Don't care. There are attractive women in wrestling. I'm sorry, they're a dime a dozen. They just are. That's the nature of the business. But so if those of you that are thinking I'm being like some kind of, I don't know, misogynistic pick. No, the fact of the matter is I don't give a damn what she looks like because I am sick and tired of seeing her on my television screen taking up Bobby Lashley's time and even using this as a storyline, I think is doing Bobby Lashley a disservice. The sooner he just says we're done, files the divorce, signs the divorce papers, and he leaves and just goes on to a career that I know he can have, the better. Bobby Lashley right now is on the rise. So my teaser at the open was, did Bobby Lashley get elevated even in the loss? I would say yes. Even in the loss, he did, because he was distracted, but he also was kind of a fool for being distracted. And you should be, apparently, we were told you were laser focused. So if you're laser focused, why are you even distracted by anything going on outside the ring when you have an opportunity in front of you that you haven't had in 13 years? And apparently what you're here for is to win a championship. So I guess I digress on that point. But the answer is, I think Bobby Lashley was elevated. He showed us a little bit of what he can do. I think nerves were there for him. There were some sloppy things where he almost literally tossed Drew McIntyre at his neck. That was scary. But I enjoyed the match overall. I think there's chemistry there. A lot of firsts happened here at Backlash. A lot of first-time matchups, which tell you they're probably going to lead into the Extreme Rules pay-per-view for Chapter 2 for a lot of these. And for some, go to SummerSlam for the blow-off for Chapter 3. So that's, I think, where we're headed here. And could Brock Lesnar insert himself into this? Absolutely. In fact, I would pretty much bank on this happening at Extreme Rules. I know I said that it could happen last night at the pay-per-view Backlash, where Brock could come out and interfere and leave both men laying. But that, to me, that those chances exponentially increase at Extreme Rules in July. Because then you're only a month away from SummerSlam, you're building towards SummerSlam, there's no more pit stops, and that's where Brock Lesnar interjects himself and probably does what I thought he was going to do last night, and just come out and lay waste to both guys, in which we get a triple threat at SummerSlam. That would be awesome. Lashley, Lesnar, Drew, triple threat would be awesome to see, and damn, I hope it's in front of some kind of audience that that are true WWE fans. And yeah, NXT trainees are fans, I know, but I'm talking about paying customers, ones that don't go by the narrative that WWE wants us to go by all the time. We go there, we pay our hard-earned money to tell you how we really feel about something, and it's going to be very interesting, to be honest with you. When we do get back into a live arena format and there's true WWE fans there that are there because they paid their money to get there, how they react to the current storylines going on. Do they match with WWE's NXT robot trainees? Do they not? It's going to be interesting. I'm very curious to hear. Are they just so excited to be there that they're not going to really boo anything and they're just going to just, you know, it's going to be like the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania. I mean, who knows? I think we're still a few months away from that. All right, so I think I said my piece. I'm a little bit disappointed that Bobby Lashley lost the way he did. But if it's because of Lana and it wasn't because of just a clean victory, I think the worst case scenario could have just been a clean loss for Bobby Lashley, where there's no distractions, no excuses, and Bobby Lashley just straight up lost to Drew. That would have been the worst case scenario. At least this gives him a little bit of an out. But you know who I want out? Lana. Show her the door, please. Or just pay her to sit at home. Please. Pay off her contract. Ship her to AEW. I'm done with Lana. I can't say that enough. I'm not even sorry. I'm just not. Okay. Final thing here. And I wanted to end on a positive note. I did. But it's hard. And that's what she said. It's hard when you have the obligatory post-produced, overproduced, just some kind of weird vision of Vince McMahon's wrestling presentation. And Kevin Dunn sitting there going, oh, that's great, Vince. That's good stuff. Let's, you know, let's go with that. I like this. Let's, you know, I saw an 80s movie last month and they had these ninjas in them and it was kind of cool and they were doing these funny moves and it was really comedic. It felt like, and I don't know if anybody has seen this movie. It is not a well-known movie. It came out in the early 90s. It is called Three Ninjas. The Three Ninja Kids, or Three Ninjas. The Three Ninjas. Basically, these adolescent kids that visit their grandfather's camp in the summer and apparently learn how to, like, they learn martial arts and learn how to train to be ninjas. And they are finally able to apply those skills in a real life scenario, fighting real ninjas. And it is exactly the way that it ended up last night from what we saw. It was straight up garbage. It's straight up garbage. I don't care. It's not entertaining. I don't know how anybody finds this stuff entertaining. WWE unfortunately got a hall pass by fans to do this on a monthly basis and every pay-per-view to just see what they can do and how terrible they can be at presenting professional wrestling in a serious manner. Yes, you know what? It has to be serious most of the time. Why would I not want it to be serious most of the time when I'm supposed to believe that they're here to compete? Entertaining is a byproduct. I can't underscore that enough. Entertainment is not a priority. It should not be explicitly told to fans that you're going to do. Entertainment is a byproduct of the aforementioned competition that you are supposed to be taking part in. So that's, I think, the concept WWE doesn't get. That we don't explicitly talk about entertaining. Like when Sheamus yells, "Are you not entertained?" John Cena coming on the mic after, you know, Raw goes off the air, "I hope we entertained you tonight." Like, shut up. I mean, no. Entertainment is a byproduct. That's how it happens, because of the simulated competition that you are taking part in. That's how entertainment happens. Don't tell me you're going to entertain me. Then I have a preconceived notion that I don't need to get emotionally invested in what you're going to show me, because what you're showing me isn't real, because it's just entertainment. It's just for fun. I can't explain. Does anybody understand what I'm saying? Am I just talking up my ass? I mean, All right. I mean, I think I said that as well as I can possibly say it. My brain cannot say it any simpler. So I don't know if that's to my detriment or not. But this segment here with the ninjas was just garbage. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's just crap. It's terrible attempt at comedy. It's Vince McMahon's knee slapping backstage, thinking that, you know, the fans love this somehow, or how can you not love it? This is going to be great. That kind of, I mean, it was like a ripoff of a, if it seriously felt like Three Ninjas. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not saying to go watch the movie, because it's not a great movie. It's more of just kind of a nostalgic thing that I watched as a kid, but it's exactly that. It was just a ripoff of a poor quality B-rated movie about ninjas. It was terrible. It was like Kung Fu. It was like Kung Fu The Legend Returns. Anybody see that in the early 90s? I don't know. I'm probably ripping off stuff nobody knows what I'm talking about. But beyond that, beyond how terrible this was, you also have to remember the real victim here. Not even the viewer. I mean, we were victims. Because, hey, in today's world, we got to have the victim mentality. We're either victims or oppressors. You got to pick one. Don't get me started. But beyond the fans being the victims, the real victim here, the real one that took the hit, the Raw Tag Team Championships. That's the real victim right now. Those are the real victims, is the Raw Tag Team Championship itself, the value of those belts. They plummeted to a new low. They plummeted as far as gas prices went last month. Because it tells you, not only does WWE not view the tag team championships as inherently valuable, but we're going to put them in a comedy segment and on a weekly basis have these two guys and their competitors competing in sophomoric activities, in recreational activities, jumping through hurdles, right? Doing bowling, basketball, all this nonsense. So it is the worst of the worst of professional wrestling. It's awful. And the real shame is it's really tanking those championships and what they mean. And it's hurting the Street Profits, who are ultra talented, especially Montez Ford. He just is. Montez Ford is ultra talented, and it is killing him. It is killing him, and you have them also competing with the guys they're supposed to be fighting with. What? I'm gonna not rant on that anymore. But did you guys really expect me to review that and have anything good to say in terms of that ninja segment? Please. Please. So, overall, I thought the pay-per-view was good, though. Good to very good. Even despite that garbage that WWE puts on a monthly basis now. Akira Tozawa leading a motorcycle ninja gang was just... It was the worst combination of bad 80s movies and the worst version of professional wrestling combined. It was just a total dumpster fire. So at least that's how I viewed it. But those of you that loved the Firefly Funhouse and Money in the Bank ladder match, and you love the Boneyard match, you probably love this thing. If anybody loved this, please tell me why. How? Not even why. How could you have liked this? Email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Please. I'm begging you. Begging. On my knees. I'll even put a voicemail up. I will put your voice on this show if you explain to me why you like that. But anyway. All right. Well, that's my backlash review. As I am talking, Raw is still airing on the USA Network. So I'll be doing tomorrow night a Raw review. On Wednesday will be a From the Vault version of Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm going to be reviewing The Undertaker Chapter 4 in the near future, so stay tuned for that. That is something I know that you guys are interested in, and I am also, too. I saw it. It's awesome. I'll just leave it at that. It is just, it's getting so good. I mean, not that it was bad, but it's getting even better. I will say the one thing that I think I like the most about this whole docuseries is the backstage conversations that it feels like we're not supposed to hear, but we hear, and we never hear because we're fans, and it seems like it's a secret. We're kind of like listening in on the cool group, or we're listening on the conversations we would never hear. That to me is the coolest part, are hearing the backstage conversations and the ones that are kind of off mic, but not really. Love that stuff. Love it. All right. Well, anyway, guys, that's the schedule for the week. Of course, AEW and NXT coming to you on Thursday. And then Saturday is your SmackDown review. And then also coming up is your Week in Review, maybe Sunday. I haven't decided yet. It might be a Sunday type of show with your Week in Review. As we start to now, look forward to Extreme Rules that comes to you sometime in mid-July. I don't have the exact date, but probably somewhere around 4 weeks from now. Extreme Rules is the next stop, and then it's SummerSlam. Happens quick, doesn't it? Real quick. So, all right. Well, guys, that's all I have for you today. But don't forget, hit me up on my, I was going to say Twitter, out of reflex. Maybe I'll get that resolved soon. I'm working on it. But email realwwepodcast@gmail.com and the website at wwepodcast.com. I'm working on other things that are video related. I'm trying to get an intro put together, a video intro. I'm trying to get a professional looking background. I'm not trying to, like, you know, like I said, sit here with like kids' toys around me. This doesn't look good. You want to make sure that's professionally done and all that. It's hard. It's hard. But it is something I'm working on, and getting a new laptop in the near future. Lots of stuff. But I'll kind of save that for later. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening, guys. Give us a subscription on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us if you like the show. Tell a friend, download us anywhere that you can find podcasts. And thanks for listening. Until then, guys, talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.